called a deacon. It simply was
whether it's best to hand out outlines this way, speak or not. Some seem to find them helpful. I'm glad to do it. Be glad to do it even for other lessons if it is truly beneficial. At least it gives you something you can keep and refer back to maybe in the future if that should be desirable. While the outlines are being handed out, let me just mention that I'll be away this week, beginning a meeting tomorrow night with the Valley Station Church in the area of Louisville, working with Brother Aud McKee up there. I'll be there through next Sunday evening. We'll have services morning and evening. A good congregation. I look forward to the association with the church there, but I'll miss being here. We'll appreciate your prayers, as I know you offer them from time to time when I'm away and engaged in other work. Look forward to being back next Sunday evening, Lord willing. It's one of the beauties of air travel. Get home and sleep at home if everything works out well. The study of church government would be incomplete without consideration of the work and office of deacon. Qualifications for deacons are less demanding in many respects, more within the reach of many of us who might require some additional years to prepare for the work of an elder. Even young couples can work toward qualifying the husband within the foreseeable future. For the maturity, years, is not demanded of deacons, that is demanded of elders. I think that this study is particularly relevant to our own situation, inasmuch as some thought is given to the being given to the selection of additional men to serve as deacons. And as we study, I think that each man in this congregation and each woman, for special emphasis for some reason, seems to be given to the wives of deacons, to be thinking in terms of qualifying for that great work. It is not a thing that we would run for, as a politician might run for office, be ambitious of, or the honor that might be involved, or the distinction that was given. It's not a thing that we would try to prevent someone else from attaining because of any ill will. Our attitude should be positive from the very beginning, I think, toward such a study as this. Is it possible that I might qualify as a deacon? And if I am not now qualified, what do I need to do in order to be qualified? And if the church should see fit to choose me, could I serve effectively? On the other hand, if the church should not see fit to choose me, will I be gracious enough and big enough to continue working so that I may be a more obvious choice next time the choices are made? I've seen some men make some wonderful progress growing out of the fact that they were not chosen for some work of elder or deacon at a given time. Instead of becoming unhappy about it and feeling that they've been wronged in some way, I've seen them just look with a much closer magnifying glass at their own life to see what might be needed. And I've seen them actually produce those things. And I have had occasion in a number of instances to say, well, just a year ago, I didn't think that man was qualified. But here during this year, I've seen sufficient growth that I really believe I'd be in favor of seeing him an elder or a deacon in the congregation. And this will hopefully be the result of such a study as this. So it's something that is relevant to every one of us as we study such questions as that which we're studying tonight. The deaconship is an office. This word, like the word elder, is used in both a general sense and in a special sense. We learned that the word elder sometimes refers simply to older men. I think in 1 Timothy 5:1, when he says, rebuke not an elder, he's speaking there not of one who's been appointed, but simply an older man, because he goes on and talks about older women and younger men and younger women. It's a matter of age. But the word elder, as we learned, is sometimes used in an official sense. So men are appointed to be elders. They're not appointed to be older, but they're appointed to be elders. And in the same way, the word deacon has its general use. And in fact, it's used many, many times in the Scriptures in a general way. The word deacon means servant. It's a transliteration of the Greek word diakonos. It emphasizes the servant in relationship to his work. Whereas the word doulos, which is another Greek word, translated servant, emphasizes the servant in his relationship to his master. We would not emphasize the deacon's master. If you say he's a deacon, he's a servant, you turn around and say, who's his master? Well, of course, the Lord. Oh, he's the servant master of us all. But the emphasis is the work that he's doing in the word diakonos. Whereas under doulos, the emphasis is upon the relationship to the master. Now, this word is used of servants with no reference to officers of the church. For instance, in the 23rd chapter of Matthew, verse 13, we have Jesus speaking of parable. Parable, the parallel of which, I believe, we studied this morning. And in verse 13 of Matthew 23, I've got the wrong passage there, I believe. Anyway, Jesus speaks about the servants, the master saying to the servants that they were to, it's chapter 22, get it right now. Chapter 22, that typewriter gone wrong again. Then said the king to the servants, and the original, that's to the deacons. Now he wasn't speaking about deacons of the church, he was just speaking about the servants who were nearby who would perform this kind of a task. So the king said to the servants, bind him hand and foot, and take him away and cast him into outer darkness, there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. In John, the second chapter, when Jesus turned the water into wine, we have two references there to the servant. Verse 5, his mother saith unto the servant, whatsoever he saith unto you, do it. And then in verse 9, when the ruler of the feast had tasted the water that was made wine and knew not whence it was, but the servants which drew the water knew, the governor of the feast called the bridegroom. The word servants there in the original language are deacons. But you know he's not speaking about deacons in the church, in the official sense. In John the 12th chapter, in verse 26, Jesus speaks of his servants, meaning simply all his disciples. But the word is deacon. If any man serve me, let him follow me, and where I am, there shall also my deacon be, or my servant be. If any man serve me, him will my Father honor. There are a number of other passages here in which Christians, all Christians, are spoken of as servants or deacons of the Lord in the sense of rendering service. Sometimes the word is used in a special sense. In Acts the 6th chapter, verse 4, the apostles, after they had arranged for the appointment of 7 men to take the work of serving tables, said, we will give ourselves to prayer and to the ministry of the word. And actually, that's the deaconship of the word. The service of the word in the sense of being performing the work of deacons. In Romans, the 15th chapter, and verse 25, when Paul spoke about taking the relief to the poor saints in Judea, he spoke about the ministry of this gift. And when he spoke of that, the word ministry has to do with being a deacon. I go now to Jerusalem to minister unto the saints, to deacon or serve unto the saints. And one other passage, which I think is significant, Romans 16, verse 1. I commend unto you Phoebe, our sister, which is a servant or a deaconess. And I say deaconess because it's feminine. The others are masculine. But this is simply the feminine form of the word deacon or servant, which is of the church, which is at Synchrea. Now, some have taken from this that she was a deaconess in an official sense. But I see no reason whatever to assume that it was an official sin, since this word in the masculine form is used again and again and again in the Scriptures to refer simply to those who serve the Lord. But, moving on, this word most certainly is used in an official sense. Just as men who were elders could be appointed officially to be elders, so those who are deacons can be appointed officially to be official deacon. And thus we have in Philippians the 1st chapter, verse 1, Paul's address to the saints in Philippi with the bishops and deacons. Obviously the deacons serving in official capacity, even as the bishops. And in 1 Timothy, the 3rd chapter, verses 8 and 12, we have there the qualifications for servants or for deacons. Deacons who would be officially appointed into this role of servant. And early church history abounds in references to deacons. Almost from the beginning, we have records from secular writers dealing with this office. We would emphasize that the office involves no oversight or general authority in the church. This is exercised by the bishops alone. I have read of congregations and could even name some with which I've had some acquaintance and familiarity, where the elders and deacons all met in one great meeting. And when decisions were to be made, all had their voice, the deacons just as much as the elders, no distinction whatever made between the two. There's just no justification for such procedure as that at all in the Scriptures. The elders are the overseers. They are the ones who have the responsibility for decisions. And the deacons are not overseers. And it is not their responsibility to make such decisions as to the work of the church. The bishops oversee the deacons just the same as they do other members of the congregation. And so the deacon's work is one of service rather than one of oversight. But from this fact, it would be very easy for us to assume that this means, then, that the work of the elders is more prominent and more honorable than the work of deacons. The elders are overseers. They rule the church. But the deacons only serve. You know, to take that kind of an attitude is just to throw out completely all that Jesus said about greatness in the kingdom. Greatness in the kingdom is just not measured in terms of who's over and who's under. Who has authority and who serves? Who makes decisions and who implements the decision? This is not the basis on which greatness is measured in the kingdom. In Matthew 20 and verse 28, we're told that Jesus said, I came not to be ministered unto, but to deacon, but to serve. And in Romans 15:8, even the very noun form is used when it says, Now I say that Jesus Christ was a deacon of the circumcision for the truth of God. Jesus himself, being Lord and Master, still occupied the place of deacon and servant. And in Matthew 23 and verse 11, Jesus said, He that is greatest shall be your servant. You're a deacon. Does this mean then that elders just can't be as great as deacons? Well, if they serve in their capacity of oversight better than the deacons serve in their capacity of serving, maybe so. But the extent to which the elders attain to greatness is the extent to which they render service by the work of overseeing. Greatness is not involved in overseeing. Overseeing does not make them great. They're great because they serve through overseeing. And one who serves through helping a needy individual with bread or food is just as great as a man who serves by making a decision and signing his name to a paper to the effect that the church will build a $100,000 building. That's the sense in which greatness is spoken of in the Scripture. The deaconship is a work, just as the eldership is a work. And it is not an altogether simple matter to determine what that work is. The Bible teaches in three ways, as most of us understand. One, by direct statement. Two, by example. And three, by inference. Now, where is there a statement, a direct statement, as to the work of deacons? I don't know of one. I've tried my best to think of one, and I just couldn't think of one. So there's nothing taught by direct statement. Well, what about example? Well, we can learn by example if those seven men who were appointed in Jerusalem, which we read in the 6th chapter of Acts, were deacons. There's a good bit of discussion as to whether they were or we're not. they're not really called deacons by name, although it says they deacon. We have the verb form, but it turned right around and says the apostles deaconed in the word. And so whether it is used when it is said that they serve table, in the sense that they officially deacon, or simply that they serve, it's not entirely possible to determine. And later, when there was a perfect opportunity, it is said not that Philip was one of the deacons, but that he was one of the seven, which throws us just a little bit. One of those seven men appointed. For some reason, the Spirit didn't call them deacons. I don't know. But let's look at it just a minute and see what we would learn if we were absolutely certain that they were deacons. Let's read Acts, the 6th chapter, beginning with verse 1. In those days, when the number of the disciples was multiplied, there arose a murmuring of the Grecians against the Hebrews because their widows were neglected in the daily ministration. I want to go back and spend just a moment reminding us of the background of this. These people had come to Jerusalem from all over the world for the Feast of Pentecost, and while there, thousands had been converted. It was necessary, therefore, for those who had come from a distance to remain in Jerusalem longer than they had intended to remain. And soon the money began to run out, and here were these widows in particular that had no source of income, no livelihood. They were in need. Those who had homes opened their homes. Those who had property began to sell the property and to bring the proceeds to the apostles. And then distribution was made as there was need, and the most expedient manner of caring for these widows was apparently to feed them, to have a place where they could be fed on a regular basic daily basis. This was a work of benevolence. We want to keep that straight. The apostles had been obligated in this matter and had accepted the responsibility for it. But it was coming to be such a big thing that they simply could not get their work done of teaching. And apparently, their overburdened position meant that they were neglecting some. At least the Grecians, that is, those who'd come from out of the provinces, thought they were being neglected. And so they raised this objection. Then the 12 called the multitude of the disciples unto them and said, "It is not reason that we should leave the word of God and serve tables," deacon tables, really. "Wherefore, brethren, look ye out among you seven men of honest report, full of the Holy Ghost and wisdom, whom we may appoint over this business. But we will give ourselves continually to prayer and to the ministry of the word." And the saying pleased the whole multitude, and they chose Stephen, a man full of faith and of the Holy Ghost, and Philip, and Prochorus, and Nicanor, and Timon, and Parmenas, and Nicholas, a proselyte of Antioch, whom they set before the apostles. And when they had prayed, they laid their hands on them. Now, there are several things we learn of interest here. One, their work was not primarily teaching, because the apostles wanted to get out of this work of serving tables so they could teach. So this was not primarily a work of teaching. And yet, two of these men became two of the most prominent evangelists of the New Testament, Stephen and Philip. So though their work of serving was not primarily a work of teaching, yet these men did do some teaching in another capacity, under other circumstances. The work was serving tables, verses 2 and 3, for the poor widows, verse 1. And the word serve in verse 2 is the verb form of the word deacon. They were appointed to deacon this work. They were set over that business and attended to it. Now, if these men were deacons, here's a good example of a work to be done, and they were put over that work. They were given the responsibility for it, and they carried it out. Now, whether or not these were deacons, I would not undertake to say. I'm a little inclined to think they were. You might disagree with me, and your opinion would be just as good as mine. But whether or not, certainly we have some work here that had to be done that was not suitable for the apostles to do because of the neglect that it would necessitate of their other responsibilities. And it would seem to me that by inference, getting ahead of ourselves a little, if there's a work that can be done by other good brethren so that the elders do not have to leave to some of the greater responsibilities they have, and it can be turned over maybe to younger men, as would normally be the case. But then why wouldn't that be suitable work? But as we've said, we've reached on over into the matter of inference, and it is by inference that I think we have to determine the work of the deacon. For we do not have a direct statement, and the example we have at best is somewhat suppositional. But by inference, we can learn some things. I believe that by inference from their title, by inference from their qualifications, and by inference from the needs of the congregation, we may be able to establish their work. First of all, from the title. Since the title or the term deacon suggests servant, whatever service was to be rendered would be their assignment. Some suggest that their work involved physical service in contrast with the spiritual service rendered by the elders. Some have said, now the elders have the responsibility of rendering spiritual service and doing all the teaching and things that have to do with reaching people who are spiritually weak. Whereas the deacons have the responsibility of taking care of the church building and the money and the benevolent needs of the people for physical food. You know, the Bible really just doesn't make that distinction, especially if you're going to divide the work and mean that it's not united. For if I understand it, the elders are the overseers of all the work of the church, whether it be the handling of the money or the handling of the truth, the scripture, whether it be the matters of the building or whether it be the matters of the Bible classes and the teaching of the word. It's all under the work of under the elders. Now, there is work to be done that I do not think the elders have to do either with their hands or with their lips. But it's all their responsibility and is under their oversight. Now, inevitably, I think much of the material work would fall into this category. But the two works are not to be divided. And even the work pertaining to the building or pertaining to the money, material as it may be, is spiritual work. Everything that is done for the Lord is spiritual work, I think, when we think in straight terms concerning the Spirit. So this distinction is not to be made. The elders, the deacons may be used by the elders in whatever area they need assistance. And this, I think, is what is being done in this congregation in a very fine way. And I'm going to stop right here just to say something that I think needs to be said. Back when I was talking about elders particularly, some said, I sure feel sorry for the elders sitting there having to listen to all that. Well, in the first place, they asked for it, and I commend them for it. And I think it's certainly to their credit that they desired such a study. And anything that I said, of course, was not said personally to rebuke them. If I have anything that I feel needs to be said to someone individually, that's where I'll say it. I personally appreciate the elders of this congregation and feel that they're doing a good job. I appreciate the fact that they can improve and that they want to improve and are working in that direction. Having said that about the elders, I want to say about the deacons that I have never seen a congregation where the deacons came as near doing what I think deacons of the church ought to do as the deacons of this congregation. One church in which I was once, I called up one of the elders just a few days after I moved there, and I said to the elder, I said, who are the deacons of this congregation? He said, well, let me see. We've got three. He named two and never could think of the other. I had to call the other elders to ask who he was. And that's not a too unusual a situation. And you ask many deacons, what's your responsibility? Well, I don't know. I don't know. I'm a deacon, but I don't. What do you do? I don't really have anything to do. Someone has said that in the average congregation, the preachers do the work of the elders, and the elders do the work of the deacons, and the deacons don't do anything. And that's just about the way it is in many congregations. But it's not so here. This business meeting a minute ago, one of the deacons said, when something was said about appointing more deacons, he said, let's get on with it. I'm about overworked. And this is the way it is, and that's the way it should be, that each man will have some work assigned and will realize the magnitude of it to the point that he will feel that it's a little more than he can accomplish. It's a challenge, to say the least of it. We do need some more deacons. There is work to be done, and we do need more. And it's commendable that the deacons of this congregation are performing in the manner that they are, and I feel there's some other men who can perform with similar dedication and with similar effectiveness. I intended to say that. I didn't know where I'd say it, but I got it said right there. I think the deacons here are doing a very fine work, and I commend the congregation, the elders, for the planning that's gone into it, and the congregation for the encouragement that has brought about the kind of situation that prevails. Not only do we determine their work from the fact that they are called servants, but I think we can get some idea of their work from their qualifications. The qualifications, if you study them, and we'll be doing that from 1 Timothy, the 3rd chapter, do not stress teaching and oversight responsibility. The emphasis is not given to their knowledge of the Word, their aptitude to teaching. The emphasis is not given to their having their children under subjection, though the family certainly is to be, the house is to be well ordered, well ruled. But where it's said that the elders' children are not to be accused of riot or unruly, that kind of thing is not said, because I think it's assumed that the deacon's children will be younger than that. Seems to be the assumption. And so the matter of oversight and teaching is not stressed so much. And yet, at the same time, the qualities are such that they do not suggest a mere janitorial service. I'm not sure his attitude was just right, but I heard a deacon say one time that it seemed to him those qualifications were a little high-sounding for pushing a broom. And I think he had a point. Now, if he didn't love to push a broom, I don't know that he was very well qualified to be an elder. If he thought it was a deacon, if he thought it was above his dignity to push a broom, then I think he needs to see Paul Griffin out here cutting the thicket out here by the side of the building some time ago. But I do think that the qualifications are a bit strong for someone who would do no more than just manual labor. It suggests, again, one who is mature, one who is responsible, one who can be given a task to see that it's accomplished and to see it through, involving maybe being over this business. I just don't have the idea that those seven men appointed in Acts 6, whether they were deacons or not, I don't have the idea that they did all the dishwashing and all of the putting out of the dishes out on the table. But they were over it. They were responsible for it. They were mature men who were put in charge and did the work. And that seems to me to be what is suggested by these qualifications. That you select responsible men who can be given responsibility for a task with the confidence that they'll see to it that task is accomplished. And that in seeing to it that the task is accomplished, they'll conduct themselves in a manner that's worthy of a Christian, will not be a cause of blasphemy and criticism among the people of the world, because that fellow down there is a deacon, and you know how he talks, or you know how he lives, or ought to be the kind of man to be a credit to the Lord's church in carrying on the business that he carries on. But third, I believe that from the needs of the congregation, some idea can be gained of the work of deacons. If you sit down and just think of what's involved in a well-functioning congregation, put down a list of all the things that can be done, including the care of the building, problem of parking, problem of baptistry, and things that relate to that, matter of classroom teaching, matter of seeing after visitation, visitors, or just go on and on, and I'm just getting them out of my head. If you will find there would be just a long, long list of works to be done. Well, who's going to be doing? Do the elders need to be out on the parking lot, seeing to it that the cars are properly parked or that lines are drawn? Is that something that the qualifications of elders would suggest? Somebody else can do that kind of thing. Well, who? Some places it's the preacher. The preacher. This church is quite considerate in that regard. But why not deacon? It's a matter of responsibility. It's more than just pushing a broom. It's a matter of responsibility And yet it's the kind of thing that the elders do not need to be involved with. It's the kind of thing that good men can be put in charge of and attend to. And if you just sit down and list the job that need to be done for a congregation to move in a smooth and well-functioning way, you'll have some work to assign to deacons, if I understand the work of the deacons at all. And this leads me to suggest the conclusion already. Pretty good, isn't it? And that is that the work needs to be analyzed first to determine what needs to be done and then select men to do it. It's just simple as that. I'm not sure that we need to say, well, let's get us 20 deacons and then we'll back around and figure out what for them to do. That's a good way to demoralize the situation from the word go. Figure the jobs to be done, the work to be accomplished. And then as the apostle said, let's select 7 men to do that. 7 men, how many was needed for that? So they selected them. And if we need 3 men to do the work, well, let's select them. And if 6 months later we see we need a couple more, let's go right ahead and go through with it. And have the men that are needed to do the job that needs to be done. Now, I've seen some analyses that the elders have put together here of works to be assigned. And we've got deacons here, 5 deacons in this congregation, assigned some of them to 2 or 3 tasks, that any one of which is sufficient really to give a man about all he'll have time to do. And I think that more are needed, and I'm glad the elders are vigilant enough and have enough vision to see that need. And I just hope that soon we can think through this matter and appoint men who will be able to carry on that work, and I think we'll see an improvement in the general work of the congregation. I saw this happen once, a church where things were going along in the most roughshod manner I nearly ever saw. Everybody's business was nobody's business, and things just weren't getting done. We appointed about 6 elders to go with, 6 deacons rather, to go with 3 we already had. Carlton Garner was one of them, and things really picked up and improved just almost overnight. And seeing the things move on in an orderly fashion. And I believe that that kind of improvement or improvement can be made even here because our deacons are overworked with the work they're doing. We'll be studying the qualifications and the matter of selecting and appointing again, similar to the work that we did with elders. And I just hope that we'll find this a profitable study the last few weeks or days that we'll be studying. It won't be much longer. Well, much of what we've said with reference to the elders applies to the deacons, and it will be a blessing, I think, to us, whether we be appointed or not, and simply understanding what is done along that line. If you're here tonight and not a Christian, the lesson not been designed primarily for you, perhaps, and yet it seems to me that every time we study God's plan, that you should see that there is a place for you in God's plan. There's something missing from any congregation, from any individual who could be a Christian, could be in there in the workforce, is not in it, not participating. And if you're here tonight, not a Christian, we'd like to encourage you to obey now. We've had a gospel meeting, a lot of encouragement given to the obedience, and we had some restored, but we would like to see some obedient to the gospel. And though the meeting is passed, there's nothing that says that there has to be a meeting going on or even that there has to be a service convened. Whenever you realize your duty, your need for the Lord, you can respond and be obedient and be saved from sin. There'll never be a better time than right now. If you believe in Jesus and are willing to turn away from your sin, then come to the Lord. Tonight, let us assist you in baptism. You can go home a child of God. We stand and sing to encourage you to come.